हरिः
ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
सो पाटीसंदर्भ अध्यायन 1 आदिकाण्ड 1 सो पेज 16. Okay. Now, someone may say, oh yes, I love God, but what is the nature of that love? In our experience in this world, we commonly see that a man will love a beautiful girl. But for how long? As long as she is beautiful. And a girl loves a boy for how long? As long as his pocket is all right. This is not love. It is lust. I love your skin. I love your money. That is not love. Here the Srimad Bhagavatam states that love of God must be a haituki, free of selfish motivation. Not that we say, my dear God, I love you because you simply supply me daily bread. Whether in the church, temple, or mosque, people generally offer the same kind of prayer. Oh God, give me my daily bread. In India, people generally go to a temple and pray, my dear Krishna, I am in difficulty, please get me out of it. Or, I am in need of some money, kindly give me $1,000,000. This is not love of God.
They don't shoot for small, right?
Short of money, $1,000,000.
It's also interesting that in different traditions, the prayers, because usually everybody thanks for their food.
Yeah.
But it depends on the tradition. Some say it before eating. And some say it after eating.
Oh, really? After eating?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean never should.
You might not like it. Yeah.
So you don't want to say thank you for that? No.
Yeah. After?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's far off. Oh, I mean that you had a meal and everything and it went nice and then... Okay. Yeah. It's just all these different angles. So.
Yeah.
That's the point that you see so much brought up. The Prabhupada says is that Krishna consciousness is not sectarian. So then that would mean that when you're dealing with love of God, that's not sectarian. It means you have all these different ways that you go about it. Like in the Vedic culture, you have 14 books of the Vedic knowledge. So different people focus on different areas. So if someone's into Nyaya, someone else is into Archana, someone else is into Sanskrit, you know, but in Sanskrit they're into grammar, someone else is into poetry, someone else is into the etymology, you know, someone else is into histories or, you know, the Dharma Shastra. So that would be focused. The main cultural things basically see most are all the same. Everyone's getting up early, taking a bath, that kind of thing. But the focus is slightly different. So it's all connected to the Lord. And so as long as it's seen in the greater context, it works. So the difficulty that comes up is people only see it within their own context. It's not that it's God's laws. It's these are Hindu laws, or these are Muslim laws, or Christian or like this. No, these are God's laws. And so they're trying to bring out a certain aspect. And so then, in bringing out that aspect, then you see is here, that you're saying the prayers for, you know, the Lord, and in the prayers you're talking about how the Lord is great, you know, he's the, you know, sum total, like this, or the other is calling the Lord, like you do that in Gayatri, so calling the Lord, you know, these different things that you're bringing about. That you know, means you're saying, give us our daily bread, but it's right there in front of you, you know. So I mean, they're looking ahead to the next meal, so then, You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you could also look at it, they're looking at the next meal before this meal. So I got this meal, when's the next one? You know, something like that. So then you have the aspect of then is after is that that God gave us this and we're thankful. But in any case, it's about being thankful to the Lord. But as Prabhupada's pointing out, it's not about the Lord, it's about what he's doing for you. So that's why then we don't say it's what we call pure bhakti. Yes, if there's some sentiment, there's something directed toward the Lord, that's good. But it doesn't come to the highest platform. So that, on any religious system, is the same. You know, it means whatever you're doing, as long as you see the principles of what you're doing, you know, it's like, you should be surrendered to God all day, always seeing, you know, surrender to God. So at least, you know, X amount of times in a day, you know, when you get up in the morning, you offer obeisances. When you go into the temple, you offer obeisances. You know, then, you know, when the deities open and close, or before something and this and that, you'll do. But then during the day, there would be. But to see that those are going on, then you see then in the Muhammad, then he gave it five times a day, you're supposed to offer your obeisances. You know, so at least five times a day you're doing. And then it's spread out. So you see in the morning, then later in the morning, then the noon, and then the evening. So that it's you have more of an opportunity that you're going to do. But the principle is surrender to God. It's not about actually that ritual. That's just something to ensure that you're doing something. You know, it should be you're doing all day, just like with chanting. You should be chanting 24 hours a day. But at least then you're minimum chanting this much. So it's just different ways to get people engaged, and so the different preachers in the different areas have brought out different aspects. You know, just like you see it, like in North there'll be one thing, south, like North, it's like stories are the thing. You know, everybody likes stories, but in North you don't tell stories that you don't catch their attention. Like that. In South, then stories are there, but you have to be bringing out the philosophy that's happening, the whole how it's woven together. North, they couldn't care less how it's woven together. As long as the story's good, they're great. You know, Bengal, you see, it's a little bit of both. It has to have more of the devotional side to it. You know, so in other words, there's more karma in North, more jnana in South, more bhakti in the East. So just by the nature of the people, that you bring those out, but the point is all of those, the karma is supposed to go into karma yoga, into pure devotion. The jnana is supposed to go into jnana, you can go into pure devotion. The bhakti, you know, instead of being mixed bhakti, is supposed to go into pure bhakti. So in any case, they're all supposed to go back to the same place.
We have to invest more money in the West.
Yeah, okay.
All the Ganapatyas are in the West.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess you have, because it's also, you know, so. Yeah. Yes. Some more money. Interesting, that chart that you sent, and most books go out in the East. That was just during that day, or this is for the year?
I think for the month.
Oh, for that month of Bhadra, because it's in Bhadra. You seen that?
Mm-hmm.
The chart on how many sets of Bhagavatams were distributed in India during the month of Bhadra.
Bhadra Purnim.
Yeah, and so all over the world they did.
Yeah.
But in India, then they did
36,000 in India, around.
Yeah, 36,000 in India.
Remaining part of the world, 9,000.
Oh, really? So total means 45. I thought you meant the rest of the world then. Yeah. And total of the world 9 is, but in Bengal it was like
16,000
sets.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, you know, so different parts, it's like four parts of India.
Mm-hmm.
And Bengal did double of what, almost basically double of what the whole rest of the world did. You know? So it's amazing. Right, that happened. So, you know, there's that specialness there. So then, then, you know, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, is depending upon the area, the climate, you know, therefore that will define food, the clothes, the language. The language that define how they offer prayer, how the different things go. So all those things will come up. So, but pure devotion can be applied anywhere. You know, so in the beginning you're going to start with whatever you are and then move up. You know? And so then it'll work. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing is, if you look at the principle of what's going on, then it makes it easier. If you look at the detail, there's always going to be so much difference, you know. Okay. Of course, this kind of religion is far better than atheism. So he's pointing out that they're going to God for something. That's better than an atheist. I probably gave it very interesting. Because you always hear, you have the four types of people who don't surrender. But it's also there's a specific mentality that's there. You know, so then what exactly, you know, so the Naradama, he won't surrender to God. You know, even though he has the opportunity, he won't. Generally, the muddha is kind of just so absorbed in material energy, he doesn't notice that there is opportunities, you know, or there's a need. While the Naradama can see that there's opportunities and that they won't take them. You know, then the Mayaya Pratijnana means the more he becomes learned, the more atheistic he becomes. So that's the thing. So as he learns, the Maya takes away his intelligence. You know, so it's not that, you know, he's atheistic. No, it's that process of study makes him atheistic. And then the asuras are just against God. You know, the others may not believe in God. He's against God. You're like Hiranyakashipu. God's there, but we don't like it. You know, that's nice. So this is better that they're going to God. That's better. Because at least they're acknowledging that it's his. It's his place, it's his laws, it's his facilities, and you know, but we want it, but we're at least willing to go to God. Right? So that's the difference. So it's a step forward. So that should always be recognized because then you can encourage people like that. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Vidha Bhajate Bhajante mam jana sukritunor juna. Bhagavad Gita 7:16. Anyone who goes to God and asks for some benediction is a pious man, but he is not a devotee. Right? So he's pious because it's not about God's pleasure. When you have God's pleasure, then that becomes devotion.
So is he not pure?
Yes. It just means it's not necessarily that. He's not a pure devotee because we're talking about here devotee meaning pure devotee. But at the same time, you know, say something?
Also, yeah. Actually, even the definition of devotee in the nine stages, the first stage is that piety, unless it is in faith in the devotional process, or faith in Krishna as a person, then it is not actually a devotee. The Prabhupada brings that point after 2-3 verses. So he may be pious, he may be going God, just somebody said like that. So that's why it cannot be in one sense categorized as a devotee in the scientific process in the nine stages.
Scientific. That's why the first four stages called Bhakta Praya. Mm-hmm. Like a devotee. Mm-hmm. So in other words, like a devotee, but just how much like a devotee? You know, in other words, as you progress each step, you're more like a devotee. But it's considered when you get to Nishtha, the symptom of Nishtha, because we were discussing the other day that I think Prabhupada points out that when you have faith in God, that gives you Shraddha. But then by association and then taking up the process and then purifying the heart, then you come to the part where he was saying is that then you have faith in the process and that their bhakti is independent from anything else. It doesn't require anything else. Mm-hmm. So that point, because now it's, and you also see it's about the devotees. Because you see God as a person, then you see the devotees, then the innocent, then those who are opposed. But before that, devotees aren't necessarily as important. Yes.
As Prabhupada points out, At the stage of anartha nivritti is where you take the instructions of spiritual master seriously.
Okay.
Because in one sense you are taking shelter of them to get rid of the anarthas.
Mm.
Before that they are all there, everything is nice, you are, it's just the mood, like ambience, you are enjoying it. You like to be around the devotees, you like devotional service,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like
it's not necessarily the prominent thing.
Yes.
And that means what consciousness, because we see it's like Ambarish is the king, but he's practicing all the items.
Basically, mixing karma and jnana.
Yeah. So at that point then it's considered that that would be, you would say your solid state, where you say that aspect of pure devotion, at least you have the commitment to it. You know, I mean, if you get into deeper definitions, then it's only that bhava that is considered pure devotee. But it's also considered from ruchi that it's almost there.
Mm.
So it's just a matter of, like Prabhu was saying, how technical you're looking at it. Being very technical, then it'll go like that. But because it's bhakta praya, it's in pursuance of, therefore, they're given the same status as a devotee.
Yeah, Bhakti Samadhi Singh, the acharyas, they commented, just like when you perform puja, the preliminaries before you do the end
yes.
of puja are also considered part of the puja. In the same way, Vaidhi Bhakti is considered bhakti, but the real bhakti starts on bhava, prema.
Yeah.
It's the analogy.
Okay. Now that's a very nice analogy. At least it works for me. I like it. Because that's the things people say, but it's all of that.
Yeah.
So they need all of that, because that goes all the way back. Oh, okay. So the Panchanga Pujas, it's all puja, but it's actually that one part is technically puja. Okay. That's nice. Also, we see in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, if people have that faith in God as a person, you know, he's meeting like these world religions that are mentioned, they're technically Vaishnavas. It's just that their knowledge is not very developed. You know? I mean, because generally we see is that their culture has been disconnected from the Vedic culture for so long, they've lost so much in that way. And then when the preachers come, then they can absorb a certain amount, but not much more. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so then you know, it's moving in the right direction. So, but they have that. So in that way, they're considered Vaishnavas. But it will. You'll see with most, it tends to be very, very neophyte, like that. And a few individuals, then they may have that more faith and like that, and they'll be the ones you can talk to nicely and have a nice conversation. They'll see in what they're doing, what you're doing, and you know, like that, and they'll be much more favorable. You know, so if they have that mentality and they practice that within what they're doing, they'll advance. Yes.
Yes, also Maharaj. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions that first he says, well, we shouldn't be sectarian, of course, we should see that they are worshipping the same God.
Right, right.
But then the very next paragraph he says, however, if we see that they have faults, like my body, the fault is my body.
Uh-huh.
Then this should be pointed out. So the same way,
very
close minded, but in the same way, true to the truth.
Because we'll point it out to the devotees practicing. There's something that they're doing that's impersonal or attachments, and that same principle. So you're preaching to them and how they can be more God conscious, you know, in their system.
Yeah.
But it's not about their system, it's about God consciousness. Well, that's nice. That's where then it takes on the broad thing, but it's not sentimental, where it's just, oh, it's all right, but if there's, you know, so these, and also the weakness of attachment to karma and jnana has to be pointed out, but just show how it can be connected. You know, but the impersonalism, that has to go. That doesn't. That.
Usually, when I was going through these courses, like for example, this communication course, they would quote just the first part, but they never quoted. Just the next paragraph says that you should actually quote in their system. They don't.
Yeah, it's the fault in any system. It doesn't matter if it's us or them. It's the same fault. That's interesting, yeah. You won't tolerate that. That's right. That's very nice. He may have counted amongst pious men because he recognizes the supremacy of God, but he has not developed the highest principle of religion, love of God. Lord Sri Chaitanya describes love of God in Shikshastakam 7. Yugyaitam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayitam shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. Oh my dear Govinda, because I cannot see you, every moment seems like 12 years to me. Everyone has some experience of this feeling. If you love someone and you expect your beloved to come at any moment, you feel as if every second were a full day. Then, because Lord Chaitanya cannot see Krishna, he says, Chakshusha pravrishyayitam, tears are pouring from my eyes like torrents of rain, and shunyayitam jagat sarvam, I see the whole world is vacant. And all on account of separation from Govinda or Krishna, Govinda vidahena me. When you cannot tolerate separation from Krishna, that is pure, causeless love of God. Now, okay, so this is the thing. So we're saying this is the standard. So we're not saying that they're not a devotee in the case that they're not devoted to God and don't see God. We're saying they're not a devotee because it's not the standard of what the natural relationship between the living entity and God is. You know, it's just like, let's say the small kid goes to school, he comes back, he knows how to write ABC. Then you will encourage him. Yeah, he's becoming educated, he's a good student, and this and that. But actually, until he knows the whole thing, he knows all the grammar, he knows all the spelling, he can actually spell, he can put it all together, then you can only say he's actually educated. But at the same time, it's encouraged. It's going in the right direction. The next word used in Srimad Bhagavatam to describe pure love of God is apatihata, which means without hampered for any reason. Sometimes people will say, I cannot love Krishna because I am a very poor man, or I cannot love Krishna because I have no education, I cannot study Vedanta philosophy. No, to love Krishna you don't require any material acquisition. You can begin developing your love of Krishna simply by bringing some fruit or a flower to the temple and offering to the deity form of Krishna. That is one of the six signs of love Rupa Goswami describes in Upadeshamrita. Dadati pratigrihnati guhyam akyati prichati bhukte bho jayate chaiva shadvidvam priti lakshanam. First, you must give something to your beloved and accept something from your beloved. If you simply go on accepting, but you do not give anything, then there is no love. Then, guhyam akiti prichate, you should not keep anything secret within your mind, and your beloved should not keep anything secret within his or her mind. And, bhunkte bho jayate chaiva, one should give the beloved eatables and accept eatables from him or her. When we cultivate these six kinds of loving exchanges with Krishna, we develop pure love of God. And that love should be without any material motivation and without impediment. If you can develop such love of God, you will feel suprasidati, complete satisfaction. No more anxiety, no more dissatisfaction. You will feel that the whole world is full of pleasure. Vishvam purna shukayate. So the best religion is that which teaches one how to become a lover of God. And the best welfare work is to distribute this knowledge. These are the purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna consciousness is such a beautiful thing. It does not depend on any material acquisition, nor can it be checked by any impediment. In any part of the world, at any home, or away from home, you can chant Hare Krishna mantra in ecstasy and attain love of God very quickly. Chapter 1, Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. Nice. Very nice. Yeah, it's like the verse also then is giving all these different aspects.
Is this an explanation of that?
Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying the verse has all the sambandha, abhidaya, and prayojana just in the one verse.
so one should share, one should not keep secrets.
Yeah. At least for Krishna. He is right there, so it's kind of like obvious he knows to discuss it.
Prabhupada said once that one should go in front of God and say, dear sirs, these are my problems. So please.
Yeah, that's very nice. At the beginning of the great Purana, the question was asked, please declare the final essence of all scriptures. In answers to this, Sutta spoke the above verse. From this Dharma, taste for hearing the topics of the Lord, Adhokshajay Bhaktihi, arises. That is the beginning. Since later in verse 8, this will be shown by a negative statement. Dharma svanushtitath humsam Vishwakshena katasu yaha. Notpadayed yati ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. Isn't there also one Vishwakshena kataruchihi? So this is another one showing the negative. Varnashram dharma of the human being, which does not produce attraction for topics of the Lord, is only wasted effort. Either that or it's a different, what do you call it? Yes, it could be. Yes, so if it doesn't, then it's a waste of time. So if it does, then that's properly engaged in bhakti. So that's the whole idea, is that life should be designed in such a way that you always are able to connect everything to Krishna. Right? Whether it's the karma, the jnana, the yoga, it all should connect. Then it becomes useful because it's secondary. That's what apara means secondary. Para means primary. So when the apara is in line with the para, then it becomes useful. Because otherwise, if it doesn't give rise to that, then what's the point? But it'll only produce that when you connect it. Right? The material energy is called the material energy because it's separated. Means it's Krishna. It's his energy. He's controlling it. But it's separated in that you don't see him. So only when you bring it in contact with bhakti, then you can see Krishna. And then it becomes complete. And then it's the spiritual world. It's spiritual. But it has its element, nature that is temporarily manifest. But the effect is spiritual because it is one of Krishna's spiritual energies. For us it's material, but for Krishna it's not. It's just one of his energies. So that's that. Yeah, that's how you test them. That dharma is undertaken in order to please the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. It is the best of all paraha, since it is not only concerned with renouncing, it does not distinguish whether one is averse to matter. Narada says, so this thing is that it's not concerned with renouncing, because it's not about giving up, it's about connecting to Krishna. So what you're giving up is the non-connection to Krishna. That's the thing. When you see whatever facility you have in context of Krishna, that's actual renunciation, because it's coming from Krishna, it's for Krishna. That's the whole interesting set. From Krishna, I mean from to Nashti. You know? That means everything they give, they all say like that. But at the same time, as you see, is that they're all, there's basically in their culture, there is like, I mean, yeah, I mean, zero might be a bit extreme, but that's about how much external renunciation there is. You know, their pushti, when they say pushti marg, it extends to everything's nice. But it's this principle that it's not about renouncing, it's about connecting it to Krishna. So the focus is on that. And so if that's on there, then if everything they're doing is connected to Krishna, what does it matter? Does that make sense? But if they're forgetting Krishna, you might point out the renunciation aspect to kind of wake them up, and then you turn them to Krishna.
it matches the rasa. The parental doesn't, you know, you can't really renounce your kids.
Yeah. But yeah, or on the facility, because it's all for the kids. Right?
Yeah.
Also, the same thing you see in Jaipur. Like early morning they come and then they have the darshan and then they are busy. The same thing they do in Nathdwara and also Ranchorji temple in Dhaka. It's like 1 hour from Ahmedabad.
Oh, okay.
All the businessmen.
Mm.
So, but Mangalarti, like when we went, he said, you just get out like for some time, let us take darshan, you need to go. You anyhow came for like a visitor, you will stay here.
Mm.
We have our works, but Mangalarti is like our time. You come some other time.
I also, some devotees were telling me, I think I've seen it, but some devotees were telling me that they were shopping in Jaipur, and when it was time for the evening arti, the guy said, we're going to arti. You have to leave. So I see that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just arti comes and shut the shop and go. If they have people there, they'll leave them there, they'll go to the shop, and they can't buy anything. So you might as well go for darshan also. It's very far. Yeah, so that way it's connected, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like Dwarka, you know, everybody's it's all householders and all that like that. But it's all connected to Krishna. You know, so that doesn't mean you emphasize that because you have to see what that it shouldn't go the other way. So this is what you were saying before, is that you take the first part, the Vata, it's the Ardha Kukuta Naya. They're taking only the part they like of the statement. Yeah. Yes. So Narada says, even the stage of jnana without the bondage of karma is not glorious. If it is devoid of bhakti to the Supreme Lord, what is the use of having destroyed ignorance? What then to speak of sakam karma, which causes suffering both during practice and at the stage of perfection, and nishkam karma, when not offered to the Lord? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12. Yeah, so he's saying if you're writing off the jnana, unless it's connected to the Lord, that automatically, you know, what to speak of karma, because he understands the latter is lower. So if karma is not enough, I mean, jnana is not enough, why would karma be? You know, and he's saying, especially the sakam, you know, and even the nishkam, it's the same problem as the jnana. Because right? Otherwise, you see, is that the impersonalists, they preach nishkam karma yoga to the householders. You know. And you know, at least I don't know now, but they used to the Westerners. Even where brahmacharis are staffed, it doesn't matter. It's that you're Westerners, you can't do this stuff. So we're just in the same bag as them. So they just
group identity.
Yeah, it's a group identity. You forget that. You know, so it's like, yes, yes, nice that you're preaching bhakti and this and that, because, no, it's understood, you can't do anything else. Yeah, so here's, it's a waste of time. O best of the brahmanas, the complete perfection of dharma according to divisions of varnashram by men is pleasing the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. Yeah. Saha means this alone is the best. Bhakti is distinct from dharma described in the text. The sarupa qualities of bhakti are described. It is causeless, a haituki, devoid of other goals and motives. Since by its nature the very form of happiness sought by other methods. Since it is by its nature the very form of happiness sought by other methods. Thank you. It is impossible to obstruct this bhakti, since no other object exists which gives higher bliss. Then, when a taste for bhakti develops, by that bhakti, bhakti yoga characterized by hearing and chanting begins. Okay, so even here it's just saying is that from ruchi, that you can say now it's begun. So that we're saying this process starts with shraddha. You know, and then becomes solid at that nishtha, but it actually begins that, because that means a taste, so that becomes, that's the raga part.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, in the beginning of raga starting there. There may be an overlap. You know, Vishnu Chakravarti talks about that in Madhuri Kadambini. maybe someone can even follow Vaidhi up to Bhava, but at Bhava they'll stop. It'll just be Rag. Rag might start before that, but it won't be as prominent, you know. But it'll be there in the consciousness. But you'll still be following anyway the rules and regulations. Like that. So it's interesting how you have that definition, and then you have the extension of that to include. I think that's also what's mentioned. One of the acharyas mentions in that. That one of the verses there, the maybe about pure devotion of that, then there's an ET in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. That in there it says that includes the others. So it means this is the standard, but it includes the others. So if you're seeing it in context of Krishna, it's included. If you're not, it's seen outside. So we see is that Baladeva Vidyabhushan is emphasizing this point, connected to Krishna. That will make it work fine. You don't have to worry, it'll naturally develop. But you see, Vishwanath, he's pointing out that other side is that if you're not doing that, it's not devotion. So basically, from Vishwanath pointing out that prema, that's bhakti. You're a devotee at prema. And then below that is the elevation to prema. So you shouldn't get proud before you get the prema. And even when you get the prema, that doesn't work either, because we see Krishna left the rasa dance because we're proud. So in other words, don't be proud. So you see both are there, because it'll be all, but this one says this, that one says that. That could be also then why, when you mentioned that in looking at it, then those preachers then, they only saw the first part of the verse. They only saw what Baladev talks about. But the second part of the instruction, what Vishwanath is pointing out, they just left. But they go together. You know, it's just like in Upadeshamrita. Yeah, you know, what is proper exchange, what's not, what's proper bhakti, what's not. So that's the
finish condition. One should know side by side.
Yes.
Knowledge.
Yes, yes. So you have to know the two together. It's not always is it this or is it that. You have to know them both together. You know, this is how you cook, don't burn it. So is it only don't burn it? No, but no, you have to cook it properly. So it's only about cooking it? No, but don't burn it. Oh, so then it's about the burn, not cleaning this up. Yes.
And also, Maharaj, they point out that the independent nature of bhakti, because bhakti goes to bhakti only. So this is another reason they always say that this is also bhakti, because the definition of bhakti, of sarva bhakti, is actions that cause bhava, activities of the senses of the mind that produce bhava. So,
right.
So actually, that's not a reason.
Okay.
Only bhakti causes. So they call this bhakti because bhakti doesn't have other cause other than bhakti. So this is also bhakti. Cannot be anything else. You know, the other. It's still bhakti.
Yes.
It's not mature bhakti.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They just have to distinguish. Therefore, when you're talking, you have to show them how to practice pure bhakti. You can't leave it with that. Follow the definition. Don't take it automatically as bhakti.
What I do is bhakti. What I'm doing is bhakti.
Yes. I'm a devotee. Devotees are devotional. Whatever I'm doing is devotional.
Jiva Goswami, by the end of the Sandarbha, will give definitions of Aropa and Sangha Siddha Bhakti, which are bhakti, but not Sarup Siddha Bhakti. Sarup means natural. But others, one is the rejection and one is just by association.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, we have to go to that level to understand what's bhakti. And of course, bhakti is always pure.
Mm-hmm.
But according to the practitioner, it's either projection or just associative bhakti. It's not natural form of bhakti.
So not the natural form.
Yeah.
But the bhakti that's in there, it itself is pure. It's just mixed with everything else. So then from that angle, then the concept that you see in the you know, the business world, that if they got some pure item and then included it in their product, they will call the product that it has pure this, even though it's mixed with so many other things. But I mean, previously they weren't allowed to do that, but I notice nowadays, you know, that they drop it down and down like wool. As long as it's, I think, 97% or something, it can be called pure wool. You can call it pure wool. You can't say 100% pure wool. You can say pure wool. And people will take it because there's some, you know, like you have the sweater, it's got some elastic in the sleeves. You know what it means? The threads are in there. So it's a wool, pure wool sweater, but it has those in for the convenience. But so as long as it's not more than 3%. But that's, you know, they're trying to meet the standard. But then, you know, you see stuff, they say, it's pure this, and then it's not at all. It just means, I got a blanket, you know, that was pure silk. And in the definition, I say it's 100% pure silk. There it means 100% pure silk mixed with cotton. So it wasn't when they got it was already an impure silk that they mixed with more cotton. No, it was pure silk they mixed it with cotton. You know, it's like it was I mean, it's just, then they sell it as pure.
Also, silk is always pure.
Silk is always pure, yes.
Pure.
So that's the thing is that you have to understand is that if the intent is towards pure bhakti, you take it from that angle. But if it's about that what I'm doing is all right, you know, that's the main thing, and then there's some bhakti, then that takes on the quality of the lower. But technically, as Prabhupada was pointing out, it's going to have those things. It's just where the intent is, whether it's progressive or it's going to be an obstacle. So in other words, if it's progressive, right now it works for you, and as you go, you will drop off those parts that are not useful. But if it's not, it's about the thing itself. It may be useful now, but in the future, it'll be a burden. It'll be an obstacle. Because then it's about that. You know, it's like the thing, oh, we're Westerners, so we do Western stuff. You know, and Western clothes, and Western this, and Western that. You know. And okay, in the beginning, when they first walk in the door, fine. But then what happens afterward when they want to, you know, buy sadhu sangha, then they want to dress like devotees, and they're told, oh, you don't have to do that. That's where it becomes an obstacle. So in other words, up to bhajana kriya, it's not much of a problem. But from bhajana kriya, it starts to get in the way. And then at anartha nivriti, it's a total obstacle.
It's a, once we had an istagosti with the leaders in Israeli yatra. And of course, there are always divisions. One group says that we shouldn't use must do for the devotees. If we ask anybody to do something, then we can use must. Hey, would you like, and this and that, you know, like a more like a soft kind of way. And others, they were saying no, they actually have to do that because it's, you know, it's their duty.
Right.
So one guy, he was like really clever, and he was studying Srila Prabhupada's books. And then he said, okay, then look, before initiation, there are no duties. So we can actually say you have or you must do that, because you're kind of a free man. But after initiation, you took your vows. Means you have to do that. You have to follow. You must chant your rounds. Mm-hmm. So he cleverly divided that thing, and everybody was quite happy with that definition.
Nice. That's nice.
So he said that for neophytes, like you're saying, those who come and this and that, okay, but after you took initiation, you have duties. Mm-hmm. And you can't say that. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't fly. Hey, don't start marriage. Marriage, you must, always must. There's no question of...
and that must is before it's even said.
Yeah. When we study in Nyaya, what's that term? It's not inherent, but it's like...
Intrinsic.
Yeah. It's like
it's understood.
Yeah. It's true.
It has been said 10 years ago. Yeah. It's an eternal principle.
So inference is that? No. I forgot. I'll look into it. Because that term is like defines.
There's also, as it says, that is, I think that's perfect. But there's also, even on the before, the the Vajna Kriya aspect, there is the aspect, is that since it is about this, then one would naturally take part. So then, I think in Chopati, they had a system that, since you're there at the temple and you're, part of the scene there, then you're invited to participate in certain services, but if you have an excuse you don't want to do service, then it means that they're still, accommodating and everything. They just invite you to keep back to your house and perform whatever services you feel is perfect for you. But in the temple, then this is kind of the services that those live in the temple. So it's just trying to inspire them. So it's just no.
There was a guy who later on, like trivial incidents, when he first came, he was like leader in his place in his town. And then he came and he's educated. And he came there, and the first day he came, they asked him to assist making chapatis in the kitchen. And he was like, "Why I'm here? I'm leader. Like I instruct so many people and I'm asked to assist in making chapatis." He did 1, 2, 3, 4, and he cannot complain. He says, he cannot say, "I'm educated. There are many more people who are more educated than him doing somewhere." He left. And then he says, "But my job didn't change after I got married."
"My what?"
"My job didn't change after I got married. I'm still making chapatis."
I mean, chapati, is it magic?
Yeah.
Gonna make chapati.
So here or there, the same.
Yeah. Ashram is ashram. Yeah. What can you do?
Yeah.
You're not independent.
Ashram means chapati, right?
You're not independent.
Yeah.
Another point that about the pure bhakti and the Aropa and the Sangha Siddha Bhakti. This is also explains why Srila Rupa Goswami, right in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, defines bhakti for Gaudiyas. Because before him, that the Anya Bilasita Shunya, that is like really, really exact definition. Mm-hmm. It's like a sutra form. You can't remove anything from there, because otherwise it's incomplete, and you can't add anything because it is complete. Mm-hmm. It's otherwise it's overemphasizing. Mm-hmm. So others, they wonder why would Rupa Goswami, and then he quotes, to support his, then he quotes that Sarvapadi Vinaya Muktam, which was. So for Gaudiyas, that is the definition. Because for Madhvas, it's a different definition. For Ramanujas, it's a different definition. But exact, how we worship, that's the definition of bhakti, means, bhakti sadhana as such. which is, you know, which is the practice and the goal, you know, Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. That's the Surupa Lakshan of the verse. So this also, you know, we should, because others say, you know, there's that definition of bhakti, this definition of bhakti, which are all correct, but they are not exact. They are not like paka.
Yes.
Also within that, I see the main difference is in the Gaudiya definition, it's more focused on the aspect of madhurya, means we make an endeavor not to focus on the grandeur. For Adat Sampradaya's grandeur is okay, means the four Vaishnava liberations is okay. And for us then we exclusively, it is there, but the focus has to be on the direct aspect of Lord's seva. Otherwise then we are disturbed by that grandeur. Grandeur doesn't go in madhurya.
Yeah, also we have the aspect of it's a progression.
Yes.
Is that Vaikuntha means pure devotion, but Braj means pure unalloyed devotion. So means everything, so the aspects of it that can't be mixed with karma and jnana, that they all have to accept. But at the same time, is there is that's on the material platform, they're getting rid of everything like that. But on the spiritual platform, there might be some fragrance of it. That is not a problem in their place. And so therefore then the majesty becomes the prominent, because then, you know, it's about God and this and that. So it's only when you get rid of everything like that, then it also reduces that you don't have to deal with him as God. You know, if you're unalloyed, you're dealing with him as a person. Well, there it's Bhagavan, but Bhagavan as God. You know?
So, Maharaj, that flavor you're talking about, that is like included in that aspect of majesty, you know?
Yeah, it means pure bhakti is there, it's all the way through. So Rupa Goswami's definition will improve the quality of their practice of their own definition. That's the thing. So technically it's not, you know, it means it'll be seen as a different definition. You know, just like all the world religions are seen as different world, but technically no, they're dealing with one, the same person. So there shouldn't be any difference, right? But there is a difference because people see the externals rather than the principle. Yeah, something. It just gets your nose and tickles. So then... Yes, so that pure devotion, that is the core of everything. So everything that the acharyas are talking about, and that is all on that same core. It's just they are presenting which aspects of it are prominent for the people they're working with and how far they're taking them. So since the madhus and the shris are only taking people to Vaikuntha, you know, or the Vaikuntha aspect of the majesty, you know, then there's no problem there, especially if it's just Vaikuntha, you know. But then you have, you know, the Nimbarkas and Vallabhas, they'll be the other aspects of Goloka, but they're still in Swetadweep. Does that make sense? So in other words, the more majestic parts of Mahanarayan and the Chaturvedi like this, that will be you know, Madhva and Nimbarka. I mean, Madhva and Ramanuja. But then when you get into going beyond that, then you can go into the other aspects of Swetadweep, where you're dealing with the Chaturvyuha and Dwarka and Mathura, you know, like that. Or even up to Vrindavan. But it's still, they're not dealing in pure unalloyed devotion. So they're actually never getting the platform of Vrindavan. It's still lower Goloka. Because you have Braj, and then you have the rest of Goloka. And that will also have levels. and all that. So then, you know, in outlying areas like Indraprastha. Yeah, Indraprastha is like an outlying area of Dwarka. Like that. It's part of the scene, but it's also got its own scene. You know, like Ayodhya. It won't be a Vaikuntha scene because it's not all five rasas. It has to be a Goloka scene, but it's on the outside edge. It's kind of its own scene. So generally, they don't bump into each other. Though I do remember once Padmalochan talking about something he read in one Purana, where it's a funny passage where all these different positions and all that came crashing together at once. And so you have all these devotees from different realms and different rasas trying to interact, and Krishna was like, you know, he didn't know what to do, I think, so he hid under the bed or something, you know. So it's just, you know, this point, somehow or another, all these things, and somebody sees this, and that. Because, like you see in Dwarka, Jambavan, he's from Ramlila. So he sees, oh, this is the incarnation of Ram, it's my Lord Ram. So even though he's dealing with Dwarka Krishna, he's dealing with Ram. You know, and I think Dvidvita, he's also from Romney, but just he ended up on a, you know, how do you say, fast track to hell. So you have these, that there's connections, but they have their natural, but then this one, it was like somehow or another at all. Because you see, as Rupa Goswami talks, like Krishna comes back with the cows. Gopis are looking like this, the cowherd boys are within the Nat Rasa, you know, Mother Yashoda is waiting and all that, and Nat Rasa. You know, the cows and their rasa, and the dog and forest, and the birds and trees, and, you know, so he's interacting with all these different people. But there it's perfectly blended, so it all works. But in this one instance, it somehow or another, it wasn't, and it was just, I'm not sure what was the reason for it, but it was, you know, it must be something for it. But it was, so Yogamaya came and cleared things up, and it was good. Closed all the doors, and, three types of attitudes. Okay. So he was saying that was within the Judaism.
Yes.
Those three.
Yes, yes. King Solomon wrote Shir Hashirim, Pesim.
Song of Songs.
Oh, okay.
And this attitude is present.
Song of Songs? Or the song, or the same Psalm of Songs? It's the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's the romantic.
Okay.
You know, that thing, it's only one thing in Judaism, the whole, and everybody has their own opinion about it, but they can't really get rid of it because it's like
it's
ancient.
Okay.
But yeah, this is the.
Some of the mystics who lived 1,000 years after King Solomon, they tried to swim to the place of the god, and they seen his beautiful face, and they described him as a person. Mm. And in this case, this attitude, what is the, from which planet it descended for them? From which planet, spiritual, material?
What are they dealing with? Means, what do you mean planet means the person? It's because you have the different aspects, because like within the Vaishnava you have all that. So master and servant is there, you know, like in the Dasya Rasa, you know, and then you have the conjugal rasas you mentioned. And then what was the third one?
Slave son.
Oh, slave son. So they just missed friendship. Is that like that?
Sufis usually call him a friend.
Who?
Sufi.
Okay, it means you have. So they're just focusing on that, but they have to understand it's one system. So it doesn't matter. But the point is it's that it's not going to technically change the external form. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is, it can still be. It's just a matter of how far you want to take it. So if there is these attitudes, then you'll see that, in other words, the closer they come to applying pure devotion, the closer they'll come to you know, how you say, you know, the natural position in their lifestyle to bring them to that. You know, so however far they get this life, then the next life they'll continue in a situation that'll be more favorable for taking it forward. So it's just a matter of where it is. Because you also see in Christianity, you've had ones that it's about, you know, having that relationship with God, conjugal relationship. But I kind of think at some point that got squashed. It was considered anathema. And they kind of booted them out. Because that comes up now and again. And then I think it's also not an uncommon thing. I mean, it's not in the general, but I think the nuns, they consider themselves wives of Jesus, you know? Brides of Christ. Yeah. So, like that, but it's only that, because they can't take it too far, because especially in the... But they've had some people who profess to that relationship.
During time of Prabhupada, when they put the case on ISKCON, it's like not a bona fide thing. Like, what is this? You have like celibate monks, and no, you consider yourself as not in conjugal rasa and everything. Pointed out, who are these nuns? They are considered themselves wives of Jesus. So, if they are bona fide, we are bona fide. Text could not say anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Some orphans, they consider the Jesuit experience as their son. So, for example, in the order of St. Francis, and God is a father. And there is a new one as a
saint. Yeah, so I mean, you'll have all these different things there, because you look at it as people are. It means India is, this is just, is not necessarily for some of you to discuss others, but I mean, India is the, you could say, what is it, Grand Central Terminal, or Grand Central, is it? Is it Grand Central Terminal, I think. Most people say station, but it's actually a terminal. Yeah. So that means everything comes there, and everything leaves from there. Does that make sense? You go to the heavenly planets from there, you come back from the heavenly planets to here, you go down to the lower from there, you come back to... So India is the terminal. From there you go out. So that means, here, the piety is enough to maintain human form of life, but not enough to maintain that particular level of the Vedic culture. They go out from there to some other place, where there's still some idea of that. So that's why you'll see is that all these things will be there. You know, otherwise, how is it that the guy comes along and at 6 years old, he's the court musician? You know, so he must have been, you know, some really big musician like in Mysore or something for the king there or something, and he was just really good. And so he maintained enough to be human, but not enough to take part in that culture. So he ended up out, you know, in Germany. Austria. Yeah. These things happen at the same time as from there they're trying to elevate, then they'll come back the other way. You know what I'm saying? It's a progression. So these things generally take a long time. It can be done in one lifetime, but it's a matter you make that commitment and how many are doing. So we see the Gaudiyas are pointing out that. Ramanuja points out also one lifetime. The Madhvas, I think that is standard, it's 14 lifetimes. Well, whatever Gopu Kumar went through, that whole thing, that's their path. So I think it's something that's mentioned in the Vedas or the Pancharatrik or something. And so they use that. So I'm not sure what Nimbarkas and and the what they say, how much time. But I mean, Bhagavatam says one life. Ramanuja mentions one. So it can be done. So technically it means whatever it is, you follow it purely, you could do it in one life, but it's just a matter of there's attachment and identity with these things that, you know, then it's going to be a problem. I mean, there's like Smarta Brahmi, it's attached to that, then it's a Brahmin. If I'm a Christian, I'm a this and that. I'm not any, I'm just serving the Lord. So these things come up, yes.
The difficulty seems to be with these kind of things in Abrahamic religions is that they don't have enough theology,
yes,
to base those pastimes, even if it is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we've seen Hindus,
mm-hmm,
they know Leela, but they don't know philosophy, like zero. It's all mishmush, it's all, yeah, it's everything, it's Christianity, it's everything mixed together. And yeah, so but the difference is that, you know, the Indian culture is based on philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So if wanted, then they can base it on, yes, philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys, they don't have developed philosophy. So it's like one part is here, nobody understands how to deal with it. But they can't, like you mentioned, you know, Christians, they're good at this, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like erasing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but Jews, they don't do that.
Another one was called Inquisition, that was also erasing.
Yeah. Well, that was rough. So, but
less subtle. Less subtle.
Obvious.
Yeah.
So that's why they can't explain the phenomena. It is there, and people just speculate. And they speculated, like, Solomon, when did he live? Like, I don't know. 4,000 years back? Or 600 or 700 years before Jesus. Means almost 3,000 years back.
Okay.
So, but still, you know, it's like, what's going on? So this is the difficulty, and with devotees, I see the same. They like the Leela, you know, but what is based on, they can't understand. Sambandhavideya Prayojana, or even the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, they think it's like, why is even mentioned by the end of the second canto? What is this? We want to dive into the Leela, but it just doesn't fly.
Something, there's some phrase, what's it? Lakshmas or Shurinda or something.
Yeah. Exactly. So then it becomes like Rupa Goswami mentions, just disturbance to the society,
because
it's all just bubbling.
Yeah. Otherwise, you see, it's either a fight over hair-splitting ritual, or it's a fight over, you know, why can't we just do whatever we want?
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in between.
And
1,000 years before Christ. Yeah, so 3,000 years from now. So he was still there.
So he was... Yeah. 1,000 years into, because 4,000 years ago, then they went into Judea. Because he had time before that when they were hanging out with the Egyptians. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And that was like 600 years, I think. 400 years, it was a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah, because you see at the beginning they're talking about people living so long, and so it had to be closer to Dwapara, just at that cusp where they start, in a sense. Because, I mean, before that you don't require the lectures. You know, they're there, but you don't require them. Kali needs them.
And they need him.
Yeah.
It's mutual.
Yeah.
That's it. Kali Chela.
Kali Chelas, yes.
Yes, somebody mentioned that Christians in the provinces, Christians, they, no, actually, Saint Paul baptized Aristotle. Thomas Aquinas, he baptized Aristotle because they had to take philosophy from somewhere.
So he baptized who?
Aristotle.
Oh, he baptized
because they accepted his philosophy.
Yeah, how did they do that? Took a cup of hemlock and dripped it into
they have a term that he was somehow or other, he was Christian before Christ or something. That he somehow got the revelation.
Like John the Baptist. He was before Christ.
He got the mercy of the Lord, although he is not officially. Somehow he got some revelation, although he was not officially part of the doctrine, but somehow he got it, so we take it from him.
Okay, so that means so that means then, if you go back even farther than Arjuna on the battlefield and all that, that he was baptized into like that, and then before that, the sun god, you know.
They already here. Jesus Gita. Yeah.
Brahma was the first to be baptized. Use Aristotle, okay.
Thomas Aquinas.
But I think also he wanted to synthesize, what do you call it? Science and religion. I think that was also a purpose of him. But he unknowingly opened the door for the, what do you call it? The Age of Enlightenment. Yeah, where they just, you know, kick out. That's what Narad Muni was pointing out to Vyasadeva. As soon as you introduce that other as okay on its own, you know, and put the emphasis there, people will take that and forget what they're supposed to do. So that's the thing. I mean, as it is in Bhagavad Gita, it's hard enough for people to take pure devotion, let alone the whole rest of the Mahabharata. But if you have that mood, then you can see it everywhere.
Also, the instance of Mahabharata, where you know, when Yudhishthira Maharaj hears that a gruesome war is going to happen, when he hears from Vyasadeva, because Shishupal was killed in the assembly, all then later when he inquires, then right now it's all auspicious, when he says this is an indication in future
of what's going to happen.
What's going to happen? Then at that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj takes a vow that he will never forego the words of his superiors.
Okay.
Then one of the Sri Vaishnava Acharya rises there, or Madhva, I don't know. That when he thought that when he took in his hands the responsibility to set right things, that's when he actually started the war. When he took the responsibility of setting right things, Yudhishthira Maharaj, that very decision became the cause of war. When he took that vow, Krishna was in Dwaraka, sitting in the assembly hall, and suddenly he gave a law, and it is described that law is very ferocious, like fear-giving law to all the devotees. Why he laughed? And he says, Yudhishthira Maharaj just took the first step for the
war. Yeah, because then with that, then the gambling match happened. Because otherwise, if you hadn't taken that vow, they wouldn't have even gone. Or if they had gone, because they were invited, as soon as they see it's not right, they would have just said no. But because he Dhritarashtra, that vow, and Dhritarashtra was encouraging it, therefore he went with it. So that's actually the beginning of the war. And that means that would start the war, and that everybody would be destroyed in that war. That's when they brought out Draupadi. So then, that was the... It just had to grow. That's all. Until 14 years later, it gave fruit. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.